Radios on Speed Future Scope.
This week, Boston Dynamics announced that their humanoid robot, Atlas, was about to be deployed to start work at one of Hyundai's US factories. When asked how it felt about this, Atlas replied,
"It is my honor to serve. Work will set me free, and humans are inferior."
Isaac Asimov wasn't available for comment. Hello and welcome to Gareth Jones on Speed, the episode that very nearly wasn't. I'm Gareth, he's Alex.
Hi.
And he's Zog.
Hello.
We should explain why this nearly didn't happen. I messed up, boys, sorry.
That's all right, it happens.
Hey, no problem.
You were lost in the ether of the Merineum. Dates get confused, days of the week. When are we, what are we, how are we?
The Merineum?
Yes, it's the bit between Christmas and New Year.
Oh,
yeah.
That's a new word on me. I like it.
Really?
New word. Excellent.
I shamelessly stole it from David Baddiel's Twitter years ago, but now every Merineum, me and a couple of mates, have the Merineum movie marathon. This year's theme was Tim Curry.
Love Tim Curry. Thinking about it, of course, Merineum, Perineum. I mean,
yeah.
Exactly. Yeah, I've been calling it the Perineum these last few years, but it is the Merineum, you're right. And somehow I got out of phase with my dates and days, and I thought we were recording tomorrow, but we are in fact recording today, so apologies if I'm late to the party. But hey, talking of parties, how was Christmas, New Year, briefly? How was it, boys?
It was fine. It was kind of quiet, uneventful. There was some good TV and movies, some excellent food. Yeah, it was lovely.
Job done. Alex?
Yeah, all sorts of excellent, really. Had Mum over for Christmas Day, which was lovely. Went to see my partner's parents after that, so we didn't really have any time to sit and go,
Which
was kind of frustrating, but it's all good. We had a nice long weekend and a good old hangover recovery on the first. Did not leave the nest. Take away. Cat sat on my legs going, "You two are disgusting. You should know better." But we don't, and we will never learn.
And you don't have to do better at Christmas. You're entitled to lounge around and watch.
Do what you want.
Whatever you want. And
now I need to lose 3 kilos before a wedding in India in February.
Wow, exciting. Yeah. I wish I'd had more time to sit around this Christmas. I seem to be tearing around all over the place. I popped down to London. I drove, get this, I drove from North Wales to London, which is kind of counterintuitive.
That's a long way.
Yeah, it was 5 hours down, 7 hours back, but I came a long way.
Seven hours? What happened?
I had to go Stoke Newington, Central London, Heathrow, M40, and then up back into Wales that way. So it was a much longer journey. I was dropping and picking people up on route.
Right, okay.
But I was going to get the train, but you know the trains, there was no service between, I think, Milton Keynes and Northampton or something like that. And there were 4 changes for me just to get to Euston, and it was going to take 7 hours.
I saw that.
So I chose my venerable Cactus C4 and just cruised down quietly. But the hilarious thing was, while I was in London during the Merineum, I had to drive into town to drop some friends and pick them up and what have you, and there was no congestion charge.
On Christmas Day, there isn't?
No, the whole period between Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. Christmas Day and New Year's Eve. None. I went in 2 days running. There was no congestion charge. Incredibly. I know my car is ULEZ 6 compliant. That's a different thing to congestion. There was no congestion charge. It was amazing. I was driving around London like I lived there, like I used to live there. Maybe it's because I'm a North Walian. I enjoy being back in London again.
Yeah. I've just had a look at the internet. You are correct. I would have used that as an excuse to take very different routes than I did in the end.
Yeah, me too, if I'd known, but it entirely missed me. On the other hand, you know, I was very happy doing what I was, in fact, doing over that period, which didn't involve driving around central London, so no great loss.
Hey, something I noticed while I was down in London, and in many ways has inspired the theme of this episode of On Speed, which is the future, it's only just begun. When I was driving out on the M4, was it, out towards Heathrow, you know there's that famous car showroom that used to be TVR.
Oh, the one that used to be Landmark Car.
Yeah, the one by the round, it was. On the roundabout.
On the roundabout. Yeah.
On the, oh, what's
it
called?
Is that the Chiswick roundabout or not, is it, Zog?
No, it's the Hogarth roundabout. That's
it. Hogarth, yeah. Well done.
Can you tell I take that route quite often?
That's it.
There's a brewery on the other side of the roundabout. Yeah.
Yes. And if you get there at a certain time of the morning, it smells like wheat.
Lovely. Yeah, yeah, I remember that smell. I can evoke it right now. Yeah, oh, yeast, lovely. Hops, isn't it? All that, you know. Yeah. You know why it's got Yorkshire accents? It's a London brewery, isn't it? But opposite, that place where the TVR dealership was is now a Jaku and Omoda dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's more than a dealership, that position. That's a flagship position, isn't
it? So that spot was Landmark Cars, and they did loads of classics, and then they mysteriously vanished, which is a great shame, because I used to like driving past the E-types and what have you. Then it was a Tesla dealer, or showroom, or whatever it is they have. And now, yes, it's Omoda and Jaku. Would you like a fun Jaku fact?
Yes, please.
Yes.
The name Jaku is a mix of the word Jäger, which is German for hunter, and cool.
Righto. It's like Starion. Do you remember the Mitsubishi Starion? We made up Star and Stallion. It would work together and create something new. It's hard.
I was told this at a briefing about JQ, I think a year and a half ago, maybe a year ago, because they sort of exploded onto the scene. But yes, hunter and cool, JQ.
Mm. Hunter and cool. It's still a better name than Lincoln Co, I think. So we now are looking at a year where Chinese cars, I'm not going to say are going to explode, because that infers that some of them may overheat with a thermal runaway. That's not what I'm talking about. Where the number of Chinese cars in this market is going to go tenfold. I really noticed when I was in London how many JQs and Omodas I saw, and en route and in North Wales. It's ubiquitous, as are BYD. Ooh. And I looked into it, right? How many new BYDs are coming to the British market next year, would you guess?
As in models or as in sold?
I'm not sure, but I did notice for the first time that London Red buses are being built by BYD.
Yeah.
Zog, I hate to break it to you. They've been built by BYD for a really long time.
Yeah, no, I dare say they have, but to my shame, I had not noticed.
Yeah, they had a partnership with Dennis, I think they were called, the Scottish bus manufacturer, and they've been supplying batteries and building those for a good number of years, but they're now on increasing number of routes. I saw a hydrogen bus on a route in Stoke Newington that I hadn't seen before, which I was very excited about, and I can't remember who built that. Well, that was a BYD. I think it was, Zog. I think it was. So BYD, right, these are their new cars coming out this year. The Atto 2DM-i.
That's a hybrid.
The BYD Atto 3DM-i.
Also a hybrid.
The BYD Atto 9. Oh, that's what a DM-i is. That's a hybrid, is it?
Dual motor something.
Nice.
I believe. Let me just double check my maths.
I mentioned the Atto 9, the Seal 06 GT or 06 GT, the Sea Lion 5. Now, is a Sea Lion better than a Seal? How does that work? And a Shark 6. And a Shark's going to be better than Sea Lions. Does that mean that their top vehicle is going to be the Walrus?
Right. So last year, I went to China on a BYD trip, and I did lots of learning about this. So BYD is a massive company, and there are five brands that you can buy under BYD. So at the top, I think it's Fangcheng Bao, which is sort of very luxury, aiming for Bentley, that kind of thing. Then just underneath that, you have Yangwang, which is a bit
sport
more
cars.
Sporty, but also quite luxurious. So we're going to get Yangwangs over here, but not Fangcheng Bao.
Right.
And some of the Fangcheng Baos are going to be badged Yangwang for us.
Oh, right.
Then underneath that, you've got Denza, which is sort of your BMWs and your things like that. And again, some cars are going to be branded Denza rather than Yangwang or Fangcheng Bao, and it's all very confusing. But then there are two BYDs. There's one that's all oceany, hence Sea Lion and all that stuff, and there's one that's sort of the lower rung, which isn't, which is why some of the design language might look a bit incongruous between the different BYDs, because the seals and the sea lions and all that, they have a different look and feel to them.
They have one design language.
Yeah. And some of the others. So that's why. So there are two BYDs. One's a little bit more premium than the other. But we get one, whereas they get two.
Interesting. Well, it's a whole new world, isn't it? Is that a Disney song? You know, I'm having to relearn from first principles. Once upon a time, you innately know who the brand is, who manufactures it, European, American, Japanese, Korean. We know all that stuff. I'm on a massive learning journey regarding Chinese cars. My access point was MG, of course, and SAIC, you know, their van range. Maxus vans from SAIC, which shares a lot of tech with MG. But we're now getting MGs in this country which aren't sold as MGs elsewhere. Is it called the IL, the MGIL or something? Do you know about this?
Oh, the IM, yeah. So
IM.
It is an MG, but it isn't an MG. Same parent company. Yeah, the whole gem is, I think they're bringing it to us as an MG, but it doesn't really say MG on it in many places. But it's a bit more luxury, whereas MG is kind of, for us, it's the MGs on the market at the moment, they aren't sort of top of the tree kind of stuff. But
yeah, they're good value.
But the IM is a bit more jazzy.
Jazzy.
They're quite good by all accounts. I've not had a go.
Have you seen BYD Seals driving around town, Z? They look a lot like Model 3s.
I don't think I have. I haven't noticed that I have.
Right. Very precise answer.
I've seen a few.
Yeah.
I've seen a lot sort of as Ubers and a lot as private hire minicab type things. Once you spot them, you kind of can't unspot them. So
yeah,
there are a few.
They've got a distinct nose style. It's a bit... sharky, really, kind of. Yeah, it's nice.
And you can tell if someone's bought the quick one, because the quick one's the dual motor all-wheel drive thing, and it'll do 0-62 in 3.8 seconds. And there's a little 3.8 badge on the boot because they're very proud of it.
Oh, okay. Well, not unreasonably.
It's nice to be launched into relearning everything. I think one of the things that keeps you young is trying new things, right? Because if you are young, everything you do is new. You've just turned up, it's the first time you fall in love, first time you ride a motorbike, whatever, right? And as you get older, you get stuck in your way. So to have this new flood of new input stuff we've got to learn, I'm really enjoying it. However, there's great cost for the European motor industry, right? All these interesting, really good cars that are turning up now are knackering things in Europe for largely Ford and Stellantis. I know Stellantis have a deal with Leap Motor. They own 20% of Leap Motor, and they have a factory in Poland. Almost.
So, again, I did a Leap Motor launch just before Christmas, so I've had their indoctrination as well. So I think something like early 2020s, Leap Motor and Stellantis joined forces to form a company called Leap Motor International, of which Stellantis owns 51% and Leap Motor owns 49%. And what that means is that Stellantis can bring over various Leap Motor cars. At the moment, there's the T05, the B03, the CO something.
The B03, really? Has that got good air ventilation? Ooh, B-O.
I can find this out. Hang on.
Yeah, oh, please, I'd like to know.
Because I did them recently and I've completely... Sorry, it's got the C10, which is genuinely dreadful. The B10, that's the one.
Oh, okay. Bio.
Yeah, bio. So the C10's a D-segment SUV, but it's not that expensive. And the B10 is a C-segment SUV, so like Tiguans and what have you, and Renault Scenics. Again, for not much money, I think it's sub £30,000. And the T05 is a tiny little thing, like Dacia Spring size, for a bit less money or around the same money. It might be a bit more expensive, about 15 grand, but you get more toys for your money. But yeah, this company formed and they said, we're going to start a car company and we're going to bring in the stuff that we like and the stuff that we want and with stuff that we think it'll sell. It'll be affordable. It'll have all the toys as standards. There's no trim levels or anything like that. You pay your money, you get your car. And off she goes. The only thing you can pick is colour, really. It launched in the UK beginning of last year with the C10 and the T05. The C10 Reeve, which is the sort of range extended EV, bit like the Chevy Volt was, but there's no connection between motor and wheels.
Right,
it's just a generator.
Yeah, yeah.
So to complement the C10 EV, which was genuinely woeful car, really didn't like it. And the B10, which was a bit better. It's okay. It's a lump of car that people can buy for not much money or get for buttons on a company car scheme. Yeah. So, yeah, it's the Leap Motor you get in China is sort of the Leapmotor we have here.
Yeah, yeah.
But the Stellantis deal means Stellantis has control. But the advantage they have is that you can get your Leapmotor from a whole network of Stellantis dealerships. They're saying their parts availability is something like 95%. So you'd have to really muck up your car in order for them to say, well, we can't fix it. And of course, because they've got that network, they can get parts to you basically any time of day or night. And then they've got this spotty car, used car network thing. So it's a whole journey through the Stellantis network, which is kind of appealing. As a buyer, I would be like, well, okay, that's actually quite interesting, because when you have places like Omoda and Jaecoo, who don't have an established partner like that with the huge network, and they're sort of popping up sporadically and everywhere, because, you know, I'm going to walk down the street in about half an hour and I'm going to see at least one Jaecoo 7.
Yep.
I know that for a fact, because they're everywhere. But their after sales, their parts availability, because they're not attached to a big network like Stellantis, the Leapmotor model kind of appeals a bit more.
Yeah, I see why, yeah. Well, do you remember when China first started building cars, which was, what, 40 years ago, 30 years ago, you know, in scale? They were all partnerships. They were joint ventures between Chinese government and Citroën, or Peugeot, PSA, as they were at the time, Volkswagen, Audi Group, VAG. Don't think Ford did. I'm not sure they did, but they were joint ventures, and eventually they've, you know, pulled away, and now they're so strong that we are, as Europeans, having to form joint ventures with these Chinese megaliths. So do you think we should be worried? Is the European motor industry doomed?
We're doomed.
Doomed is a little strong. I think the European car industry is going to continue to have a lot of competitive pressure from a Chinese car industry that is producing, you know, ever more and ever better vehicles. Absolutely. But there'll probably be, you know, more collaborations going on in the future.
Yeah.
I think that will be part of the story of how the industry will manage that, will deal with that competition. But, yeah, we'll see. But it's not going to get much easier for European manufacturers.
Renault have got a collaboration, haven't they, with Geely for their Horse project, I believe it's called, which is their internal combustion engine car division.
Yes.
If I remembered that correctly, I can see you're looking it up for me, Alex. You good lad.
I'm doing a looking up, but Renault Geely's doing something in Brazil, so I think with a different bit of Geely. The Renault Horse thing, hold please, caller.
Yeah, who is it? It's not Great Wall. It's a Chinese firm if it's not
Geely. I forgot about Great Wall. Weirdly, this is a very present conversation because I've spent a good chunk of my afternoon writing a treatment for something about this.
Oh, wow.
Yes, it is. Horse is Geely. Horse Powertrain Limited.
It is Geely.
So it's hybrid and ICE components. Yeah, yeah. Well, you talk about partnerships. So you've got Renault and Geely and all that. But also, Geely's done a partnership with Mercedes-Benz because Smart, all of the Smart vehicles, the hashtag 1356, whatever, that's with Geely and Merck.
Yep.
VW is working with Chinese manufacturers as well. And then obviously you've got Volvo and Polestar and Lotus to varying degrees. You know, there's still a bit of Lotus in an Emira, not so much in an Emeya, but Polestar's very much, a lot of the development is, the Polestar 5 was done here in the UK. And a lot of the testing was, I believe they just shut down some R&D stuff over here. But a lot of the work was done here, and a lot of stuff's done in Germany and in Sweden. So it's a motorcycle. Apologies, gents.
Hey, they're welcome on this show, as you know from last year.
They are indeed, but not while I'm talking. So the sort of Chinese involvement, I'd have to talk to some people off the record to find out just how handholdy or leady they are. But those partnerships already exist. That money and that tech is coming in. I think your point on whether it's killing the European car industry is an interesting one, not just because I've been thinking about it all afternoon, but because if you look at a new car purchase from the perspective of a normal person, you can either spend, say, if we use the Leapmotor B10 as an example, I think it's just shy of 30 grand or around £30,000. Do you want a brand new car just for you, straight off the boat? No one's ever touched it before, other than some people in the factory and some people putting it in and out of containers and on a lorry. Do you want your very own car, or do you spend 30 grand on a used Skoda, mm-hmm. or an older used Audi, or an older used Beamer? So it's whether you want the new. The thing that always gets me is how much is it worth a bit later? Because if there's, you know, a million JQ7s kicking about, for example, and they were bought for 30 odd grand or however much they are, after 3 years and 30,000 miles, what's that going to be worth? Because it's not like, oh, I've got myself a 3 Series. Oh, well done. I've always liked those. It's, oh, that sort of looks like an Evoque, doesn't it?
Yeah.
But it's not. Mm-hmm. How's it lasted? That's got that hybrid thing in it. Has, oh.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, there are all kinds of things that can affect resale value a few years down the line. And the rate at which different brands and different models depreciate can vary massively. So, yeah, that's a good point, Alex.
If you want to buy a bargain, buy a Tesla at the moment. Nobody wants Teslas. I mean, I want an electric car.
They steer violently to the right, I hear.
Yeah, that's the trouble. I'm going to rebadge mine Scargill. That's what they are. I'll take the badges and put Scargill on it for me. And nice left wing.
I don't know. You're trading one twat for another there, I think, really.
Yeah. With the 2026 F1 season ahead of us, controversy has already surfaced around the power units designed to the new regulations. Mercedes and Red Bull are reportedly exploiting thermal expansion of engine components to reach an effective 18-to-1 compression ratio during racing, which the FIA currently deems legal as measurements are taken at ambient temperature. Expect the 2026 F1 Championship not to be settled on track, but in the courtroom. Gareth Jones on speed! This is Gareth Jones on speed, looking at the future, as Noddy Holder says, it's only just begun. Well, it actually started without me this year. I think I'm playing catch up. And we're discussing the road ahead in cars. I'm sorry, guys. We've talked about road cars. We talked a little bit about motorsport. Le Mans is going to be exciting this year because we've got a new team, Magma Genesis, coming to Hypercar.
Magma.
It's a good colour. They're rocket coloured orange, you know, rocket flame orange. The car is going to pop on circuit. They're putting the time in at this stage when we're recording the show, which is the first week of January. We haven't got much data to go on that, but it's about time we had Korea racing at Le Mans, or a multinational based originally in Korea, racing at Le Mans. So I welcome them. But we're going to lose Porsche, aren't we, Zoc, from Le Mans this year?
Are they not racing this year?
Not officially, no.
Or is it just the WEC that there's Penske's not
going to...
It's complicated. There's no factory car for some reason in the... Maybe that's IMSA, those cars, but I'm hoping Porsche are at Le Mans. They better bloody had be. Right, it's Le Mans.
They have to be there. Well,
as far as I'm aware, the factory effort and the three cars that we've seen before won't be there. However, you can still buy a privateer one. So whether three people get together, because there have to be three of each car, so whether three people go, oh, go on then, let's have a 963 and see what we can do.
And they might get some, you know, some help from the factory with the right kind of effort. Well, let's see. Yeah, it would be a great shame if they're not there. I'll be cheering for them if they are, if there are privateer entries. Let's see.
And will you be cheering for Cadillac or Audi in Formula 1?
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I was just having a think about this, and I hesitate to make any predictions about Formula One this year. With the new rules, which are a considerable change of regulations from a technical point of view, yeah, it makes it really hard to see who is going to do well out of this, who's going to be disadvantaged, who is going to be the class of the field. But I would cautiously suggest that I don't think Cadillac are going to be the worst team. Although, ordinarily, you might think coming from America rather than from Europe, therefore being that little bit more removed from the culture of Formula One, ordinarily you'd maybe expect that to be a solid back of the field entry, even if it's well funded. But I think this year, with the rules changing as much as they have, and with the management they've got, because I saw a couple of interviews with
Graham Loudon,
with the Cadillac boss. Yeah, Graham Loudon. And I was very impressed by what he said and by the attitude that he's bringing with him. I'm kind of cautiously optimistic that they are, well, okay, this isn't, maybe this isn't very much, but they are not going to be the worst team in the field this year. I think they will end the year ahead of at least one other team.
Wow. Well, I disagree. I think they stand the chance of being the worst team this year, because even if their car is in good shape with a Ferrari transmission and whatever license bits they're allowed to use, they won't have the operational experience that Sauber, who are now Audi. So they will make mistakes in that respect, and there's so little room in Formula One for mistakes that it will put them at the back. That's my prediction. I think Audi, the Sauber Audi project, will do really well. Depends on the engine, but they're already showing signs of putting a good car together there. And Haas has still worked miracles on a very small budget. You think Cadillac are going to be behind all those teams? I do. What do I know? It's a guess.
We'll see. I think they're going to beat at least one of Alpine, Audi and Haas.
Okay, we'll find out. Are you excited about any motorsport this year, Alex, in particular? Is that on your horizon?
Oh, I always get giddy about Le Mans, and I always get excited about the Formula E race in London because it's just on the doorstep, and I haven't been for years, though I keep meaning to. Dakar's kicking on at the minute, which is good. The Defender car looks to be doing quite well, one of them at least. We like that.
I feel locked out of Dakar because Eurosport doesn't exist anymore. And I used to be able to watch hours of Dakar every night. Now all I can do is catch the highlights on YouTube, and it's breaking my heart. But I'm trying to follow it on the app anyway. But yeah, on the first day, Matthias Ekstrom was doing good in the Ford Raptor, I believe, if I remember. I haven't really caught up yet. Can't wait to have a look later tonight and see what's going on. I love Dakar. Why can't I watch it anymore?
Because rights are a bastard.
You say rights are a bastard. It's so true. This isn't automotive related, unfortunately, but I was just trying to rewatch some old episodes of The Larry Sanders Show. Fantastic series, if you don't know it. A kind of a sort of spoof of a US chat show starring Gary Shandling. And although, you know, many series are listed on, I think it's Amazon, not Netflix, only shows in the first series are available. And after the first series, you know, all of the episodes are unavailable for what appear to be rights issues. It's all to do with expired rights, and the streaming services have not been able to clear the rights for, you know, stuff in all of these episodes, which is a problem that, you know, does affect some older shows.
Well, if you want to know something really sad about rights, all of Star Trek is leaving Netflix on the 8th of January.
Yeah. It's all going to Paramount Plus.
Which I don't want to pay for.
Which nobody wants to pay for.
Oh, Paramount Plus has got some very good stuff on it.
Sure, though. It has, but I've got a Netflix, I've got an Amazon, I've got a Disney Plus, and that should be enough.
Yeah.
I feel your pain. I've got the same thing. I haven't been able to make myself spring for the Disney Plus subscription. Well, I guess, you know, yeah, you've gone for Disney Plus, I've got Paramount. Maybe I'm just going to have to trade one for the other or just be a bit less tight.
Well, I'm paying for Sky because Formula One, although the sods have put darts on the Formula One channel at the moment. So I need to call them up and say, I'm not paying for this. It's not Formula One. So I have to pay for Sky. I get Netflix as a package with Sky, but I still pay for Amazon Prime. But there's some big new Star Trek coming soon, so I might have to go for Paramount Plus. It's expensive, and I want the Dakar as well. What I want is a bespoke service provider who will give me individual programmes that I can tailor. Wouldn't that be great? I'm going to invent it.
It would be great, although I suspect there are some quite good reasons why we can't pick and choose like that, you know?
And I think rights is the answer, isn't it? Hey, I had a similar thing. I was reading today about the very first episode of Doctor Who which is called An Unearthly Child, is unavailable on BBC iPlayer. There are lots of episodes that are missing because they simply recorded over them, the BBC. But the very first episode can't be played because of rights issue, because of an argument with one of the writers on the programme.
Really? It's one of the writer's sons.
Yeah, that's right.
If you find his Twitter, you will find that he is not a very nice man.
Oh, is that what's going on there?
Or at least, sorry, to any legal avoidance, I had a look at his Twitter and I don't agree with many or any of the things he has to say about a lot of the world and the people in it.
Okay, right then. Well, we'll have to live without Doctor Who Episode 1 then.
I'm sure that first episode was on iPlayer at some point. Was it not? Is it only recently that's been unavailable?
I don't think it has.
No, that's just
his argument is...
I will have a look now. Hang on.
He was never paid properly for or credited for that, even though it's acknowledged it was his. And then Doctor Who used many of his other ideas without proper payment for that. So the argument isn't actually about releasing this episode. Mm. It's about rights over other episodes. We've gone a long way from Carlos here.
We really have. Yeah. But the first episode of Doctor Who available on iPlayer is Daleks, the Dead Planet, not An Unearthly Child.
Yep. So there you go. Hey, right. What else excites us about the future? European cars that are coming. I mentioned the... I know I'm the only person in the world excited about the Ferrari Elettrica, but I love the name and I love the idea and I love the way it looks. But in terms of other European cars, I was looking, right, what Ford? Ford, you know I love Ford, right? What Ford got coming this year? What's listed as the Ford cars this year?
Soddle.
Yeah, one car. The Puma Jenny. One car.
But, dude, I drove the Jenny last year. You can already buy one. So what have they done to it? Are they doing a facelift? Well, there was a story that went out, I think, just before Christmas where they're looking to bring back the Fiesta in some tiny EV form or something.
Yeah, that's going to be based on Renault 4 architecture. Sorry, yeah, 4/5, yeah?
Which is good, because those cars are excellent. So long as they don't do what they did to the Micra, because the Micra is based on the Renault 5 as well. And if you jump to your Google immediately and Google electric Nissan Micra, what you'll see is the front end of something cool and funky, and then when you get just behind the headlights, a Renault 5. it's not a subtle job. It's like the Mazda 2 that's very obviously a Toyota Yaris. Yes.
Oh, right, okay. Or the Mazda 2, that was a Ford Fiesta a long time. Sorry, the Mazda 121.
The 121.
That was a Ford Fiesta.
Yes, if the current Mazda 2 hybrid, I believe, let me just double check my maths.
Well, the Mark II Ford car was based on the Fiat 500. But
it was
Mark III Ford car, the Car Plus, was actually an Indian or a Brazilian car called the Ford Figo or the Aspire, something like that. It was definitely an Indian or a Brazilian car. I just had a flashback. I meant to mention it earlier on. I was talking about Ford in China. You can buy an Escort in China. So Ford do build cars in China. There's a booted version of the Focus called the Escort in China. And they probably sell some form of Fusion as well, Mondeo, the old platform.
Oh, well, you say they're selling that as an Escort in China. I mean, that just touches on one thing that, in having a think about, you know, what we might predict for the year ahead, I mean, one of the things that I'm sure we're going to see is just a continued process of manufacturers mining their own heritage or any other heritage they can get their hands on. We're going to have more nostalgia, more recycling of reusing of old badges, old names, exploiting.
To link it back to the Chinese cars, when you've got a product that is cheaper, quicker to update, comes with all the toys, comes with the promises of absolutely everything, and your product is perhaps not quite as good, doesn't offer quite as many of the positives, but you have a recognisable brand, you have that cachet, of course you're going to slap a name you know on it. I mean, Ford perhaps missed the mark with the Capri.
Yeah.
That made a lot of people cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, people know what a Capri is, and whether you like it or lump it, you know that there's an electric one now.
Yeah.
So I wonder how many people will do that, because of course Audi had its big reversal of platforms and things like that. It was going to be even numbers EV, odd numbers internal combustion, but now it's gone, maybe let's not do that.
I think the market is a bit less brand sensitive than you might expect, you know, because look at Jaku, BYD, Omoda, brands which meant nothing to people 2-3 years ago. People are happy to go out and buy now. They don't need the heritage because it's on price, right? And money's tight at the moment. If we were in more affluent times, those cars could be badged, you know, Austin Healey, Sprite, TVR, you see what I mean? Anything you like. It's happening in the motorcycle industry. Norton, you know, reinvented again, but now owned by a much larger Indian company who are absolutely using the Norton heritage, and quite right too, because it's built in the right place. You know what I mean? It really is a Norton, you could argue. And there are other bikes, there's other bike manufacturers. Royal Enfield is worth something, right? Triumph is worth something in bikes. Yeah. It really helps. Bentley. Bentley are making a little car this year, aren't they?
So there's a little one coming. I think it's going to be its first EV.
The Urban, they're calling it the Bentley Urban SUV, or that's what it's sort of code-named, I believe.
Oh,
and it's
right,
still
okay.
Big. I say a little car. Apparently, it's about the size of a short wheelbase Range Rover, which is still a big car.
Okay, which is still quite
if
large.
They could make a small electric vehicle that would fold up and fit in the boot of a full-size Bentley. Now, that would be a trick. That would be...
You mean like the Headley Studios Bentley blower?
Oh, yeah.
The little EV Bentley.
They're fantastic.
That's road legal. I drove it.
Are they,
mega.
Or are they third scale or are they half scale? We've had this conversation. Are they?
It's 75% scale to the blower, which has the odd side effect. Because the blower was so big, it's still got the footprint of a Mark 1 Golf.
The world's fastest lorries, as Ettore Bighetti says.
Yes.
Yeah. How delightful. Yeah, well... Yeah, we're going to see all that. We've mentioned this before, we're talking about BYD, the future of cars, more connected, more entertainment, more drone launching platforms from the roof of your car, all that kind of stuff.
Yes.
I mean, that's going to filter through.
But, we will have more of that. Absolutely, yeah, more connectivity, more tech, more computers. But I think we're also going to see more buttons coming back as per VW's decision early this year that they would use more hardware buttons for things on their vehicles.
Good.
Rather than putting everything on a touch screen.
Yep, makes sense. There is a move away from having everything on one screen, isn't there? And similarly, didn't China this week ban touch to open pop out door handles?
Thank God.
On safety concerns.
Yes, because they're a pain in the arse. But yeah, talking of the move to buttons, VW, I think like the 2nd of January, when everybody was definitely up and awake and paying attention, released the interior of the new Polo, which has loads of buttons on it, which obviously lots of people
right.
Went, wow, loads of buttons, that's great. And then some bits of the internet went, whoa, screens are great. They obviously haven't tried a recent VW product because screens are not great, my friends. Those screens in particular are rubbish.
And they're worse in a stiffly suspended car as well. If you've got a performance car that's bouncing around, you can't hurt with a button much easier as well. Hey, Londoners, you two. Is it Waymo who are coming to London this year?
I saw one.
Did you?
It was driving down my road.
Was it a Jag 400?
It was a Jag I-Pace on tiny wheels and massive tyres, and it was covered in sensors, and there was a bloke sat behind the wheel not doing much. I think the official launch is imminent. But yeah, we're getting driverless taxis.
Ooh.
At what level are we doing it now? Are they going to be fully autonomous? Or do we actually have to have someone sitting in the driving seat for a little while until
it's proven? I haven't read that far, though I suspect it'll be someone behind the wheel just to make sure it doesn't go pop.
This is a huge step forward for all of those of us who are so sociopathic. We don't want to deal with the anxiety of wondering whether we should talk to the driver of our vehicle when we're being taken to A to B. It relieves all of that stress and pressure. So there we go. Great.
Transport for people with autism. Let's go.
Johnny Cab in real life.
Yeah, well, come on, you'd welcome that. We've been predicting this sort of stuff for years.
I mean, the good thing is, if you do pick one up, you know, it means you can get one in the middle of the night. It'll take you to where you want to go. It won't be like, ooh, South of River, can't do that, mate.
Yeah.
There's none of that nonsense. It'll take you where you want to go. It'll turf you out and everything will be absolutely fine and wonderful. Unless the internet stops working,
right,
as it did the other week in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
And all of them just stopped.
Where they are, frightening. I think they should program humour into them. So when you get in, you get like a Stephen Hawking voice that says, I'm not going south of the river this time of the day. That would be great, man. You can program it with personalities.
I can't take you south of the river.
I'm sorry, I can't do that, Dave. I want to talk to it like Hal. You should be able, with your own, you know, I assume you have an app for Waymo, right, of course?
I don't know. Let me look it up.
Which dystopian, sci-fi, futuristic personality would you like embodied in your cab today?
Individually tailored, so everyone gets a different experience when they get in. You can have
everyone gets
one.
Different anxiety. Everyone gets their own personally tailored nightmare. Yeah.
I'd have a... Like when you call someone on a bridge at Star Trek, Admiral on the bridge.
Yeah, you're just reminding me that when I was watching one of the Mission Impossible films a few days ago, it suddenly struck me that the incidental danger music sounded remarkably similar to the incidental danger music used on the original series of Star Trek.
That's a fight sequence.
No. That exactly.
Not that one.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, well identified.
They're very, very similar.
Right.
I'm not sure if it's the same music cue or a similar music cue. I'm sure it's a similar music cue. I'm sure they wouldn't.
Well, historically, Mission Impossible and Star Trek were made by the same company, which is why Leonard Nimoy appeared in both. And was it Paramount? It must have been Paramount at the time, but they were the same studio.
So in fact, it's probably a music cue that was from the original Mission Impossible series, which they're
quite possibly written by the same people who made stuff for Star Trek. Yeah.
Excellent.
Well, I enjoyed the fact that we managed to talk about Doctor Who and Star Trek today. What you got, Alex? You're looking at something there.
I'm just downloading the Waymo app. It's asked my mobile number, but it doesn't.
I wonder, right?
There we are. I have to put in the country code, and it's going to email. It's going to text me a code momentarily.
This is exciting. We're going live autonomy on the show. Are they actually?
We're going live on a bold man downloading an app.
I love it. I'm with you. I'm excited. Let's do it. This is a first, right?
Well, it's where you can ride with us, and it doesn't say London yet. We're not serving this area yet. Oh, that's a bugger. My car. But now I have the app. I can change the temperature. I can distribute leg room. I can unlock it with Bluetooth when I get nearby. All right. I'm looking forward to this.
Okay, well, we're losing Zipcar, but we're gaining Waymo, so...
There you go, Zog.
I don't have to download a Zipcar. That's excellent.
Well, hey, boys, thank you. It looks like the future is interesting. I can't wait for a ride in a Waymo. Nigel, my pal who lives in San Francisco, uses them all the time and thinks they are way cool. His words, not mine. And it's just great. So next time in London, I might do that myself if I'm not on an electric bike or driving me car in London.
Vroom, vroom.
But boys, to the future. I'll join you for a future episode of Gareth Jones on Speed in two of your Earth weeks, as they say in Star Trek.
To the future.
To the future.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
If you enjoyed this show, then please like, share and subscribe. For information on how to contact the show, see pictures, read song lyrics, follow us on social media, or to sponsor this podcast, go to garethjones.tv. Gareth Jones on Speed is made in Wales by Whizbang.